discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square, and finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
He had no idea how his life would be changed. No idea the heights of joy, the depths of sorrow his decision would bring. But as he leaned over to his friend Jay at the end of a talk by Bob Goff, Jim Gash whispered, "We're going to Africa," and there was no turning back. Today on the road, it's the story of a California lawyer who discovered injustice halfway across the world and forged a relationship with a young African man named Henry. That relationship transformed into a cause that's reshaped the lives of Jim and his family and helped bring greater fairness and hope to an entire country. Mr. Jim Gash is the director of the Global Justice Program and a professor of law at Pepperdine University. He's written Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and Their Remarkable Battle for Freedom. And sir, it's a great pleasure to have you here. How are things going for you today? I understand that you're actually experiencing a little bit more brisk weather than your normal Malibu, California climate.
That's right. It's good to be with you, Ryan. And Henry and I are in Washington, D.C. right now, doing a few book-related events and talking to the media, but also showing Henry what it looks like to be in a cold climate. Having grown up and lived in Uganda his entire life, he'd actually never been cold in his entire life prior to coming here. And we're here in Washington, D.C., where cold is a bit of an understatement, although I assume your readers or your listeners have a good sense of what cold is like.
They are fairly well conditioned to that prospect, certainly. But it's good to know that education is happening for Henry there today. So, Jim, as we set up this scene, as your story opens, 6 years ago, you're a successful lawyer. You're a professor at a respected institution. You've got a beautiful family. And the legal issues plaguing Uganda are probably not exactly top of mind to you at that point, right?
That's correct. In fact, I was doing a very good job of ignoring what I later look back on as a call to service. I was someone who was very comfortable and interested in keeping control of my life. And going to Africa to try and assist them with tackling some of the legal issues was probably the farthest thing that I could have imagined happening at that time.
I wanted to also just set the scene of what your faith was like at that point. Have you been a man of faith since your youth? And where were you with God at that point in the story?
Well, I was in a really good place. I did grow up in a Christian family and have never departed from that faith and felt like everything was going great. I was the author of my story. I was writing a wonderful 42 chapters at that time of a great family, a great job, a great life, and God was doing an excellent job of playing a supporting role in that. He was a supporting actor who was there when I needed him. He carried the themes. He was someone who was available to be worshipped, but I had yet at that time to surrender the pen, to surrender the authorship of my life in any real sense before really taking this step of faith, and so that was a big thing for me to surrender control to God.
At this point, you also had a colleague there at Pepperdine who was nudging you to perhaps get involved with the Global Justice Program, and that had been happening for some time, right?
It had. Jay Milbrandt, who is a professor at Bethel University there up in the Midwest, was our Global Justice Program director. He was one of our former students who had been very involved in going overseas as a student, and he convinced my boss, the dean at the time, Ken Starr, to appoint him to direct the program, and Jay made it his goal to lure me into this. I was the dean of students. He said, "These are students that are going. You need to be involved in this." And I was very, very comfortable with the way my Bible read at the time, which is, "There are they, Lord, send them." And so I was helping to send students and helping to send Jay and encouraging everybody. But it wasn't until I met Bob Goff in the late fall of 2009, when my Bible changed back to what really says is, "Here am I, Lord, send me."
Oh, well said. We're hearing the story of Mr. Jim Gash, director of the Global Justice Program, a professor of law at Pepperdine University. His book is called Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and Their Remarkable Battle for Freedom. And you were attending, you talk about Mr. Goff, you were attending this extraordinary talk that he was giving at a conference when something that he said caused you to rethink your position. What did he say that that impacted you and changed you so significantly?
Well, Bob was a keynote speaker at the annual Christian Legal Society conference in San Diego, and this was prior to Bob writing the book. Before there was a book called Love Does, there was a speech called Love Does, and that speech absolutely slayed me in terms of, he said, you know, love isn't about just encouraging people and praying for them and supporting them and sending them. If you love, then you will do. And when he was done with his speech, I was done with my excuses for not taking a step of faith myself. And that's when I decided, I leaned over to Jay and said, okay, dude, we're going to Africa. I have no idea exactly what we're going to do, but Bob had described this juvenile prison in Masindi, Uganda, where there were kids that had been arrested and were waiting for trial with no lawyer and no trial date and no hope. And so we said, here are we, Lord, send us, and started to plan a trip.
And you write that your life as you knew it was really turned on its head in that moment and by the journey that you would take to Africa. You've talked a little bit about how you selected Uganda, but what did you plan on doing there?
Well, we planned on trying to be as helpful as we could. We were aware that you needed to be a Ugandan lawyer to actually practice law in Uganda, but we also had a relationship with the Ugandan judiciary through our students having been going for several years as interns, and they were amenable to us going out there and trying to assist by preparing these cases for trial, giving those to Ugandan lawyers, and then letting them move forward. And so that was our goal, is to do the interviews, to do the case summaries, and to prepare a case brief so the Ugandan lawyers could move these cases toward the end resolution.
Did you have a set of expectations that you expected, you anticipated to find there in Uganda, and perhaps what surprised you the most, or how were your expectations most set on their head by what you found?
Yeah, I didn't have nearly as good of expectations or clarity as what we were going to see as I should have, because when I walked into that juvenile prison in January of 2010, it was devastating. I had kids at the time that were that age, and seeing 13 and 17-year-olds living with no electricity, no running water, no flush toilets, no hope, some of them there for nearly 2 years without having access to a lawyer or to a trial. They'd been charged with a crime, but had just been warehoused at that time. And I remember thinking as I walked in, you know, this isn't okay with me. And I also remember thinking, somebody's got to do something about that. But at the time, that's not going to be me, because this is my one and done. This is my volunteerism trip. Check the box to show myself, to show my family, to show my God that I was willing to take a step of faith. And so at that point, I thought we were going to do something for a week and to try and help. And then I was going to go home and, you know, wearing my merit badge for having, you know, done my little duty. But it didn't turn out that way.
That's the voice of Mr. Jim Gash. And I love how upfront you are with your expectations, and that vulnerable style characterizes the book that Jim has written, Divine Collision, An African Boy, An American Lawyer, and Their Remarkable Battle for Freedom. And we're here on the road for Faith Radio, and I'm Ryan Thomas. Now, Jim, tell us how you met your young friend Henry and what you learned about him in that first meeting.
Well, yeah, when I walked in, we had been reading the guidebooks, and the guidebook said, everybody, you know, it's an English-speaking country. Well, and that's true in the capital city and among the educated, but in the rural areas, particularly among the uneducated, English was not a common language, and only two of the kids spoke English that were in there, the 22 kids, a boy named Henry and his younger brother, Joseph. And so immediately they became our interpreters. And Henry was standing closer to me when we paired up into teams. And so over the course of the next week, Henry sat with me side by side. And we talked not only about his two cases against him, but we talked about the other cases against the other juveniles as he helped us prepare these cases for resolution. The first case against Henry involved a mob killing of a herdsman that used to work for his family tending their cows. And what had happened is he had stolen their life savings from under the mattress. 3 days later, the mob and some villagers in the village found him, beat him to death in a kind of a mob justice thing, and deposited him on the family's front porch. And in the developing world, too often happens, the police arrest and then investigate. And that's what happened. They arrested the entire family and then proceeded with an investigation. But we were now 18 months post-arrest. And that was the first meeting I had of him. This is a potential murderer. What I didn't know is that he had also been charged with a second crime at least I didn't fully understand him, in charge of the second crime that involved a juvenile who had just come the month before I arrived, who had come to the prison, who was very sick, and the matron, the person who was in charge of the prisoners, was hiring them out to local farmers. This boy tried to escape and ultimately died of an asthma attack. And so Henry, who was the prime minister of the juvenile prison government, was charged with murder along with the matron. So at the time, he had two murder charges against him when I first met him.
Well, you mentioned the first part of that answer a bit about some widespread issues that exist there with the Ugandan judicial system. And does Henry's case, that situation you talked about, basically you make the prosecution first, you ask the questions later, is that pretty emblematic and representative of some widespread issues in the judicial system there?
Well, it was, and fortunately the Ugandans are taking ownership of this and making huge strides now toward changing that culture of arrest first and then investigate later. And so as the story unfolded, Henry's first charge was dropped on the first day of trial. They said, okay, we're going to start trial. This is in April of 2010, 3 months after I met him. And they said, yeah, sorry, we don't have any evidence against you. We've never had any evidence against you. This first case was dismissed. The second case went to trial as a result of some huge violations of due process. The lawyer that represented him also represented the adult, and the lawyer called the adult to the stand. They blamed him. None of the witnesses who saw what happened were called. So Henry was convicted. And so in late April of 2010, I returned to Uganda for my second trip, and that's when I met members of the judiciary. And that's when they said, hey, can we do something about this? Can we work with you to try and create a more just system? Right. So they started coming out to Pepperdine, and we started training them on how to do this. And they are now running with that, not only in the juvenile realm, but in the adult realm, and delivering the kind of justice they seek for their population.
Well, it's a tremendous story, and I want to talk more about that continuing impact that the great wisdom is having there and how you're able to be such a big part of that, Jim. If we back up just a moment, how did you make the decision to invest, not only to hear Henry's story, but to give him your cell phone number and to invest in his life and to become so invested in his situation?
Yeah, I would say initially and transparently, quite reluctantly. It was one of those, really, Lord, is this what you have for me? Everything is great in Malibu. Everything is fine. My family, we love it here. But over time, as I got to know him, as you mentioned, I gave him my cell phone number during that first week. Also, after some careful thought, do I really want to do this? But I believed in his innocence. I believed in his future so much that I did. And he called me, and then I called him back, and then started pouring into his case, had an opportunity to actually represent him in the Court of Appeals in March of 2013, which was about a year after my family moved to Uganda. We moved there in January of 2012 for 6 months because the Ugandan judiciary said, we want to make these changes we've been studying about, but we would like you to consider moving here to help us. So I said to them what I say to anybody who asks me to do something I don't want to do, well, I'll pray about it. So we prayed about it, my wife and I and our three children, and ultimately we felt like this was where God was leading us. And so we uprooted from Malibu and moved to Uganda in January of 12 and helped them create and implement a structure for moving cases from arrest to trial much more quickly. We started in the juvenile realm, and as I mentioned, they are now doing this in the adult realm.
That's tremendous. That's the voice of Jim Gash. He's director of the Global Justice Program and a professor of law at Pepperdine University. He's written Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and the Remarkable Battle for Freedom. And you mentioned being able to represent him in that huge step of taking your family to live there for half of a year in Uganda. But it was pretty extraordinary and actually pretty historical that you were allowed to represent him as his lawyer in the first place, right?
Yeah, well, in Uganda, just like in many countries in the world, in order to practice law in a jurisdiction, you need to be a lawyer in that jurisdiction. But they had created a constitution in 1995 that was written by then by the then Chief Justice, who had written into there a provision that allowed the Chief Justice to give a one-time exemption for any lawyer to argue a case if they were approved by the Chief Justice. And so as Henry's case moved toward the appeal realm, I received permission to argue the case. They had done that once before for a Kenyan lawyer, so I had the opportunity to be the second lawyer from outside of Uganda to appear in Ugandan court. And so I got to stand with Henry in court in March of 2013 and be his advocate with the Court of Appeals to try and clear his name and exonerate him from all charges.
Now, it's been almost 6 years since you first met Henry in that prison. How has his life progressed? And tell us about the current status of his case.
Yeah, well, Henry was released in May of 2010 when I flew back to be with him the day after he was convicted. I prepared what's called a pre-sentence report, and the judge who sentenced him was not the judge who convicted him. It was a family court judge that sentenced him, and that family court judge knew all of the facts that weren't presented at the trial. And so Henry was sentenced to 1 year of probation and was released into the care and custody of Restore International Leadership Academy, which is run by Bob Goff, in Gulu, Uganda. So Henry resumed his studies. He did a couple more years of junior high, and then he completed high school there. And Henry is now actually a second-year medical student in Uganda. So he has fully embraced his freedom. He was exonerated on June 19th, 2015. We got a ruling from the Court of Appeals, letting us know that he had been convicted in violation of the Constitution. All charges were dropped, and he had full exoneration. So he is now on his way to becoming a cardiologist. About 4.5 years from now, he will graduate from medical school. So he is flourishing and is actually here in the United States with me now, traveling, seeing what the developed world looks like and seeing kind of what justice delivered in the United States looks like. We've been to the Supreme Court. We've been to a juvenile prison. We've been all over, just kind of sharing the story of how God's faithfulness in his life and in mine led to transformation for us and transformation for the judicial system of Uganda as well.
Yeah. Well, congratulations both to yourself and to Henry on that. That must be just a source of great joy for both of you.
Well, it is, and it's a pleasure to be able to walk alongside the Ugandans as they're taking ownership of bringing justice to their people, and to walk alongside Henry as he experiences the life that God had intended for him, and he lived into that.
Well, just reflect on that a bit. I mean, as a man of faith, what has that relationship with Henry taught you, and how has it shaped your faith story as well?
When we first met, I found out that he was a believer and was someone who had been praying deeply and fasting for relief from his current struggles, and he considered the arrival of this group of lawyers to be God's answer to his prayer, and so it strengthened his faith dramatically. And just watching him bear up under the stress of this wrongful charge and this wrongful conviction and the trust that he had in God really strengthened me to have that same sort of trust. And then when I felt God saying, I felt I didn't hear. I wish I heard God's voice more clearly, but I felt him saying, it's time for you to surrender control to me and trust me to guide your life, to write the next chapter of your life. And so that was helpful in us moving to Uganda. If the faith of this young boy can be so strong, surely I can have a piece of that myself and take the step of faith. And so it's been transformative, not only for me, but for my entire family. My kids' world is so much bigger than mine was. When I was a kid, I remember growing up seeing Sally Struthers on these commercials showing these Ethiopian starving kids and saying, the call to action that you have is to send money. This generation, my kids and the people that are in college right now and in law school, their call to faith, their call to action is send me. I'm not going to send money, send me. And so it's just so inspiring to watch this younger generation who believes they can end injustice in their lifetime. And I believe that they're right. I don't think my generation believes that.
This is such a tremendous tale, Jim, that I know there are those who are listening right now who are wondering if there's anything that they can do to assist in the ongoing efforts that you are making there in Uganda as well. I know that your friend Bob Goff is involved. Could you speak to that a little bit more and anything that listening friends could do to either assist you or just to learn more?
Yeah, well, I would say what they can do is to continue in prayer for their own lives, to figure out where God has the next step for them, to surrender control, whether it's across the street or across the country or across the world, to step into that. Just take a step towards your deepest, darkest fears and see what it looks like. And if they want to read the book, it's dual first person. So you have Henry's voice and my voice throughout to see just through our eyes. I think the readers will identify with him, someone in a deep struggle, relying on God, and so, and identify with me, someone who was fearful of taking a step of faith. And I used to think it was fear of failure. But as I look back now, it was really fear of success, because if things failed, then I would just go back to my normal Malibu life. But if things were successful, if there was something for me to do, then everything would change, and everything did change. And so I would say, be prayerful about your own life, resist any fear, whether it's failure or success, and to the extent people want to get involved directly in the work in Uganda, we have a global justice program that we've actually received calls most recently from Guatemala. We've got a group coming in from Guatemala in a couple of weeks. We've got another group coming from Uganda. And today I heard from Nigeria saying, is there anything you can do to assist us in making these reforms as well? So we're looking for ways to increase our bandwidth. And so you had somebody who was quite interested in increasing Pepperdine's bandwidth. We'd be more than happy to chat with them about ways that they could leverage the work we've done into other countries with support.
Well, you've described the magnetic pull that keeps bringing you back in those return trips to Uganda. What's ahead for you, and particularly your relationship with the Ugandan judicial system?
Well, in October of 2015, we hosted the new Chief Justice and eight other members, high-ranking members of the judiciary and other judicial branch figures, and expanded the memorandum of understanding between Pepperdine and the country to include prisons and to include the Department of Justice and the Solicitor General's office. And so we're in the process of expanding our cooperation between Pepperdine and Uganda into additional areas. One of those areas is trying to work with the prisons in increasing some faith-based education, some faith-based rehabilitation efforts. So we're excited about that. We're also looking at case management issues with them. I'm returning to Uganda in early April to start working on projects related to the juvenile prison, those who have been convicted as opposed to those who are waiting on remand, where Henry was, to try and expand the efforts to give them the kind of future and hope that they so desperately want right now. And so I would say I'm here with open hands. I don't know if it's other countries. It's deeper with Uganda. But I'm learning, and it's a process. I'm learning to trust God more and to say, send me wherever you want me to go, and trying to be less resistant to that call, less affected by the fear that accompanies the unknown.
Right. Well said, too. I think so many of us can identify to that consistent process, that battle against the fear of the unknown. Well, there was also talk, too, Jim, of a film version of your story. What's the status of that?
Yeah, when in 2014, when we went out, because we started going out in 2010, we went to juvenile prisons in 2010, 2011, and 2012. In 2013, we started taking groups of lawyers, and I bring lawyers with me and law students, and work with Ugandan lawyers and law students to try and have an impact over the course of a week on a big chunk of the backlog. And so a company called Revolution Pictures out of Nashville came with us in 2014 and filmed our students actually before they left, filmed them in the process, filmed them afterward. And they came back in 2015 and filmed the after effects of our first big adult project. And they filmed Henry in his hometown and tell the story. So there's a film right now that is in final post-production called Remand, R-E-M-A-N-D, that we're actually allowed to do preview screenings throughout the country for a short while, and then they're going to enter it into film festivals. And so it's a 50-minute documentary. There's also been discussions about Divine Collision, the book, which has a whole lot more to this story than we've had a chance to talk about, and that's in the documentary. There's some talk about that becoming a film someday as well, but we'll just see where God takes that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there is so much great content in the book, Divine Collision, An African Boy, An American Lawyer, and Their Remarkable Battle for Freedom. And Jim, before we say farewell, what's the best place for people to go to learn more about you and all of the great endeavors that you're part of?
Well, I would say DivineCollisionBook.com is where they can get more information about the book. It's available wherever books are sold. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and other Christian booksellers. RemandFilm.com gives you more information about the film. And then my family's blog site where I give updates is Throwing Starfish, throwingstarfish.com.
Very good.
That's a whole other story of how that came to be. But yeah, throwingstarfish.com.
I was going to say, we'll have you back next week to explain that name. Sounds very compelling. Well, my goodness, thank you so much for your time, Jim Gash, and for telling this tremendous story. Once again, the name of the book, Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and the Remarkable Battle for Freedom. Keep up the great work, sir, and thanks again.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.